Well, I guess to kind of start off with, I'm intrigued by the title of the film and where the title came from. I'd love to know kind of how you came up with Jewels of Light and Dark. It's a kind of a unique title.
Man, the title is long, and I guess there's two answers to it. But the shortest one is probably that I thought it was. I thought it was a cool idea to title the film about after a character that is kind of the focus of the main character's attention. For so many years, this was just a script. You know, I had this script for, 4 to 5 years before we were seriously talking about being able to make the transition into pre-production in any kind of serious conversation. So I've always just kind of seen the movie as being somewhat past tense, and the title is just kind of, it's very much about like Maya's kind of reflections, you know, after the fact on someone that she loved very much or was crushing on really hard. And her just relationship with her own crush and whatnot. I don't know. Titles are always weird for me. You know, like Sleet Snow's a weird title, my first short film. And I have some of the weirdest explanations for why that was the title.
I kind of love it because it's ambiguous. It makes it kind of seem like, where's he going with this title? I like the title, actually. So I appreciated that the Jules character was kind of an enigma throughout, and yet she is the focus of Maya's actions throughout the film, especially her moment of realization that she can necessarily not be with Jules or doesn't have to be with Jules. Yeah.
I mean, the synopsis of it's a breakup movie, so I guess it's not a spoiler.
Yeah, nothing too crazy in there. So I've got to ask then, let's talk about casting the folks. How did you find your Maya? Because I loved her. She's quite adorable, and yet she's mysterious. Tell me how you found your Maya.
Well, showing my last short film, which was in 2014, which was like 4 years ago. We went to a certain film festival, and this actor was there that she won an award for her performance in this, micro-budget indie that I really enjoyed. And so the conversations with Tally for Maya they predate, they were always there. Like I was always just really fixated on wanting to work with Tally because she had a presence on screen that was really interesting to me and, could be confrontational and could be very vulnerable and to me, like following a movie where she's in like the whole thing is just a really enjoyable experience as a viewer. So, and when I got to meet her later down the road, she just made me laugh all the time. And I was just like, oh wow, I get to the more we hung out, the more we talked, the more I wanted to work with her is basically what happened. I wanted to work with her from the beginning, and then I wanted to work with her all the way to the end.
So when did Robert get on board? Was he much later on, or was he always kind of in the back of your mind as well?
Robert's another actor that I always wanted to work with on my first feature. I remember I actually wrote the treatment while I was DITing a film that he was in. And during smoke breaks, we would like chat about it, and I'd tell him what I was working on, and he's like, "That sounds sad," and and I was like, "Yeah, it's really sad," we were bonded over that kind of like, you know, understanding of kind of putting pain in movies and kind of translating pain through like cinematic language and stuff like that. And he's such an exciting person to hang out with and talk to about everything. We would just talk at like 2 a.m. about the character for like weeks before we shot, and that's what we did on set. It was just like a continuation of just like, let's talk about character, let's talk about like what this character could be, who, what are the limits of this guy, what are your ideas, what are my ideas. And I don't know, I love working with actors that are just like really excited about doing that. Tyler was the same way. Like, she had, you know, really, really, really early on, she had like ideas about like, you know, how she wanted to represent, you know, this particular person in the context of like being a queer character. So, you know, for Tally, representation was really important. Whereas for Robert, he just wanted to know, like, he just wanted to like explore little details of who this guy was. It was, you know. I don't know. It's just, they're both actors that you talk a lot with, and I love that process. Like, your conversation just end up becoming shooting days. It's really seamless.
So, bringing up that sad element, and also you mentioned smoke breaks. I've got to ask. There's, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but Robert smokes throughout the film in a couple scenes, and there's those moments of him just smoking, kind of looking out into the distance. And we end the film very much for his character, Freddy, of him smoking an e-cigarette and also looking out into the distance. Is there any significance into the choice of the e-cigarette? Is there any hint that, or is that just Robert's got, you know, both?
That was a production design thing. So color is really important in the film, and we kind of decided pretty early on that blue was going to be like a color that meant, you know, self-love or self-acceptance of some kind, or like it could imply like finding strength in your identity and whatnot. And we didn't always follow the rule perfectly, but I really feel like, you know, for Freddy's character, his whole like journey in meeting this young woman, this younger queer person, is just like, he is able to kind of take stock of like who he is and what his life has been about and the choices he's made, and maybe look at his choices differently and you know, maybe love himself a little more. And so I always wanted him to kind of be in this yellowy kind of world, like kind of amber world, and exist in kind of reds and oranges and ambers. And at the very end, he smokes that e-cigarette, and it's a blue light at the tip of him. I just thought that was a really beautiful way to kind of go back to, you know, it's kind of insider baseball for the production and production designer and I, but to like have that there, we both were like really jazzed about the possibility of that, what that blue light could say wherever it landed in the film. I mean, it just so happened that shot ended up being the last shot of the film.
Well, that's really cool. That's kind of, I mean, I think it's poignant. I loved the last scene, so I really enjoyed it. So I've got to ask then, you talk about your production design, building your team, and specifically your choice in cinematographer, someone that you've worked with, but also I was anticipating someone different, and yet I love the cinematography in the film. I love the view of Texas you give us. It's that isolated, middle of nowhere feel that anyone who's driven an hour outside of any of the major cities knows. Tell me a bit about building your team.
So, the very, very first film I ever made, was actually, Noe was the DP, Noe Medrano Jr. was DP of that, and I think, like, we both, you know, we went to film school together, and we developed our sense of, like, visual style at the same time with the same technology. Particularly the Panasonic, this is the Panasonic camera that was out back then, the DVX-100. It was just a really important tool in discovering how you could communicate with an audience things, you know, in a cinematic way as opposed to like a just pointing and shooting kind of way, which that camera could be really beautiful in a wide shot, and that camera could also be really beautiful, a deep focus wider shot, but it could also be really beautiful in shot with shallow depth of field, and it had the kind of lens that you were able to get those things, those kinds of shots. And so we come from kind of pretty common sense of visual storytelling, and you know, we didn't have a long time for prep on this film, and so I wanted, you know, at the kind of very, very late in the game, when it came to like the cinematographer, I wanted to work with somebody that we had just an unspoken kind of mutual instinct, you know, I think production is very challenging, especially at our budget level, and to be able to work with somebody that just that, you know, I have been in those similar situations with in the past was, I think, really, really important.
Can you talk about the importance of UTA? And I don't know, I think there's something special that you see in the Arlington kids that have come out of the last few years, and you also, you give a tribute to Andy at the end. Can you tell me a bit about just the community that you're a part of? And there really seems to be a close-knit tie to a lot of you guys, you know, knowing, and I just love to ask, is that something that seems unique and rare to you guys, or is that just, you know, you guys all just know each other, it just works easier?
Well, I mean, I think whenever you find like a tribe or you find like a squad of people that you work with and you work well with and you all have similar goals, it's always rare and unique, and should be taken very seriously, because you know, filmmaking, especially indie filmmaking, is like one of the most stressful and most ridiculous things you can ever put yourself through, and especially at the feature length level. I mean, at the short film level, you know, the types of, you know, ego throwing is pretty manageable for the most part, but like on a feature film, it's just, you know, you don't walk away at the end of 3 days. You're 3 days into 30 or 40 or whatever. And I think I don't know. You know, Noe and I used to produce the Adrian, who was also a producer on the film, Adrian Testelin, and I, the three of us used to produce the student film festival at UTA. And I mean, just to kind of, I don't know if your listeners are super familiar with UTA, but UTA, the University of Texas at Arlington, has a fine arts program that has a media department, or rather a film and media department. But it's a fine arts school, which is very different from most film programs, which are RTF programs. And I mean that program, and you know, really had a massive impact on me. And I was never a really big fan of school that much, and I liked literature classes, and I kind of transitioned out of literature classes into the film program. And so it's a great program. This is super strong. I don't want to be too unfocused here, but I didn't really think about, you know, what I wanted to say about UTA before this, especially I didn't think about what I wanted to say about Andy. But I mean, Andy taught me how to direct actors. Everything I know about directing actors, I know from either a book or being on set with Andy telling me what to do. And what's crazy is whenever I kind of went rogue and did what I thought was right, it would result in terrible performances, or performances that were not what we were trying to get. But whenever I listened to Andy, like, they just worked. Like, everything would always just work. And not many, teaching art and teaching students how to learn how to empower themselves and express themselves is not a science. And teaching directing is definitely not a science. But there were just these moments of wisdom that he passed on to me that I think about every time I write a line of dialogue in a script, every time I write a line of action in a script. I think about it when I'm writing treatments. It goes for Bart Weiss as well. I mean, he taught me how to think of, you know, arranging shots in such a way that it's a sentence or an incomplete sentence, or you know to treat editing, you know, like language. It's a great, it was, at the time I was there, it was a great school, and it still is a great school. And that's, I think it's because it's a holistic approach to empowering a student to be an artist, not necessarily a employee at a company, you know, or a piece of a production company. You can get that there if you want it, but you're kind of wasting your money. You really need to be going there because you want to make art, I think.
Well, for someone who didn't anticipate that question, it's probably one of the more poignant things I've ever heard about UTA, so I appreciate that. I know Bart will love hearing that, and I know Andy would have too. So,
I think Andy would have. Andy, I don't know. It's hard to imagine what Andy thought of me after I wasn't a student anymore. I ran into him once before he passed, and it was at a friend of mine's wedding. I mean, my friend assigned seat, gave us all assigned seats at the reception, and he had me sit right next to Andy. And I will think that friend, his name is Aaron Holloway, and he and I were also UTA, obviously, friends. We're very close. He's in the last scene with his wife and two daughters at the bowling alley. That's him in the movie. But yeah, he sat me next to Andy at his wedding reception, and it was a bizarre wedding reception and a beautiful wedding reception, as they always are. They're a mix of the weird and the beautiful and the insider. But to catch up with Andy, to hear what Andy's thoughts were about what I had done to that point and all this stuff, or even just to get one last round of advice. I mean, I can't thank Aaron enough for creating that situation.
Wow, very cool.
Aaron and I went to Andy's, you know, went to, I don't know, it's complicated. It's really complicated. A lot of emotions when I talk about that stuff.
Well, I'll switch subjects to kind of two elements of the film that I really fell in love with. First, Freddy's character has a dog that he almost kills, but yeah, he ends up saving him. I know, I don't want to, but you know, I don't want PETA to go after you. So, you know, no animals were harmed, but,
definitely not.
I've got to ask, where'd you come up with the name? Was I just reading into it when I sent you the note of, is that for Towns Van Zandt or is it just Towns?
It's Towns Van Zandt, yeah. And we actually have quite a few moments. We actually wrote it in the script, you know, Freddie says, I'm going to name you Towns Van Zandt. And then he like plays him some Towns Van Zandt in the car, because originally the concept of that truck that he drives was that he has a tape that got stuck in that truck, and it's a Towns Van Zandt album, and he just like lets it play over and over and over again, and he's never bothered to fix it. And to me, that really doesn't come through in the movie at all, but to me, like, those kind of like little details, you know, are really meaningful as I'm working with the actor, that, hey, you know, you're just the type of person who lets shit break and just leaves it the way it is for forever, and never fixes it. And you know, with the dog, you know, this is very spoilery, but you know, it's like we had a, I don't know, I think when you have a movie without flashbacks that deals with regret and past pain and, you know, reflecting on past choices, you have to find ways in present tense to show, you know, what kind of a human they are, both bad and good, you know? And I don't like, you know, I would never put a flashback in a movie, and then I did put a flashback in this movie, but that's all. I don't know how to like justify it anymore, because I was like super anti flashback until we were shooting the movie, and then I was like, let's put a flashback in. but the dog, his relationship with the dog is just meant to show, you know, it's like it's meant to show growth, but also meant to show that some people, you know, are always going to be flawed. You know, you can grow a lot, you can become a better person, but you know, it doesn't mean you're going to be perfect once you grow. You know, you're always still going to make mistakes, I feel like that is too often left on the table in movies, and characters artificially become stronger or better people, or they, you know, there's this, I just watched this movie with that Nicole Hollis Center did, and she's going to be at AFF. And she could have easily made this guy become too good of a person at the end of her movie. And I don't want to spoil it. Well, it's on Netflix, I'll spoil it, doesn't matter. but Ben Mendelsohn's character in Land of Steady Habits, like, he's still not a perfect guy at the end of the movie, but he's just aware. You know, he's aware of what his flaws are. He's, you know, and he's aware of the responsibility of just being honest and open about your flaws, not trying to like pretend to be something you're not. You know?
Well, I think it's
I don't know.
I think it's a great segue, though, to bring up AFF. And in particular, I love that you bring up that other people intrigue you that are going to be there, since it is such a, it feels like a communal festival with so many writers just being at the Driscoll together. It doesn't, I've never gone there of like the last decade of going there and ever felt like it was a regular film festival. It's got to be kind of unique to get into a festival that honors the struggle of getting your idea onto paper and then onto paper onto screen. What does it mean to you to be at AFF with your first feature?
I think you put it pretty well. I mean, you know, this movie existed as a script for like five or six years, you know, and just didn't get made. You know, we went through some pretty prestigious development labs, and nothing could get this thing to the next level, it felt like. You know, ultimately the right team came together and it got made in a flash, or at least production, you know, happened in a flash. But you know, I think of the Texas festivals to be premiering at, I think there's a lot of them that could be very fitting. You know, I could see playing at, you know, any number of these as our Texas premiere. But I've never played at AFF before. I've only attended. And so to kind of break new ground and play at a festival I've never screened at before is really exciting. And I don't know what screeners think of the movie. I'd be curious to hear what people think. That's kind of how I feel about most things, about most of the festivals. I'm just curious to hear what people think.
Well, I've got one final curiosity for you. I won't bring up the scene that it's in because I think it's one of the more powerful moments in the entire film. But your choice or how you found this song, because it's difficult to find. How did you find Lee Moses' Bad Girl? And like, what made you? I love that moment in the scene. It took me like 30 minutes of Googling to figure out that it was that, but then it was like, how the hell did you find this song? Were you a fan of this before? I never heard of it, and it kind of blew me away.
I mean, I have to attribute it to another music supervisor from another film that found the song, and I heard it in this other movie, and I loved the song, but didn't like I didn't like its kind of use in the film. I thought it kind of said something opposite of what they've been building towards. And I really love the film, so I don't want to like talk too much about it. But I don't know. I think that like that song has always stuck with me since I saw that film, and I was like, man, I think, you know, like, we were trying to figure out, like, how to cut the scene, the sequence you were talking about, which takes place at the Omni Hotel in Dallas. And it was a really important scene for me. Like, it's actually the location we shot at was the same location where I came out to a childhood friend, like, 7 years ago. And I was like, oh, man, we have to shoot there. If we're going to shoot this movie in Dallas, we have to shoot there. And we were able to make it work and make it happen. And when we were editing, it was like this really cool 20-30 minute sequence. And I just felt like that it was an opportunity to maybe say something emotional without a whole bunch of tiny dialogue moments. Because I think the audience just really needs kind of an emotional like outpour at that point in the film. And it's like, I don't know, it's a defiant song. It's a song about desire. It's a song about like kind of like feeling your oats and loving yourself a little bit. And I think it's just we put it in there as a temp song and it made it to the final cut. So,
well, I loved it, and it, I think it completes the scene so beautifully. So, I'm glad y'all were able to get it in, and, Daniel, I appreciate the chat.
Maybe we'll talk again on video at some point. Sorry I wasn't able to be there. Talk to you in person.
It gives us more reason to when we're down in Austin.
Yeah.